Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive.
Quite frankly, I get most of my news from you.
Joan Esposito.
Y'all ready for this?
On WCPT 820.
Hello, thank you for joining me this Tuesday, July 20th. I'm getting to be like a broken record. There's a lot going on today. Yeah, there is a lot going on today. So we are going to get to it rather quickly. First and foremost, news that we did not want to hear. I had a bad feeling last night when I saw that at 1 o'clock today, Dr. Allison R. Waddy, head of the Chicago Department of Health, and Mayor Lightfoot, were going to have a press conference today. And they did. And things are not going well. The numbers are on the rise. You know, we got down to where we were, the positivity rate, you know, everybody who gets tested, how many people end up with COVID. We had gotten below a 1%. I think at the lowest I saw it was 0.04% positivity rate. Well, that's changed, folks. That's starting to go up. It is, some people have called it an epidemic of the unvaccinated. Virtually 99.9% of the people right now who are getting really sick from COVID, being hospitalized, being put on ventilators, are unvaccinated folks. And if you're an adult and you want to make that stupid decision for yourself, I'm not happy about it, because your body could become a petri dish where the COVID vaccine gets inside, mutates, and comes out in a form that's going to get me, which I'm not happy about. But more so, we are now seeing sicker kids. More kids are being hospitalized, some of them in very serious condition. And while it is not common, kids are dying from this. You know, if it were just you making a stupid decision not to get vaccinated, I wouldn't be happy about it, but I'd probably just shrug my shoulders. But if you're responsible for a kid getting sick, shame on you. Shame on you. I'm going to share with you some of what Mayor Lightfoot had to say about the rise in COVID cases. She's trying to tell people that it is not too late to get vaccinated. You need to get vaccinated, because the numbers are rising all across the area. Listen to this.
All across the United States, there's been an increase in the number of COVID-19 cases, including in parts of central and southern Illinois and right here in Chicago. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen a steady rise in our daily case and test positivity rates, an increase that we believe is caused by the highly contagious Delta variant of COVID-19. Our average daily cases have risen to 80, when just a few weeks ago they hit a low for the entirety of the pandemic of 34. Test positivity rates were also hitting record lows in late June at 0.4%, but now the number is up to 1.5%. And while these rates are still below our peaks, it's still a concerning development that we wanted not only to stay ahead of, but to quash completely. And the way that we do this is by doing the right thing, the safe thing, and that is, ladies and gentlemen, getting fully vaccinated. And more of that in a moment. If we allow the virus to continue to linger here in Chicago, we will likely see further mutations, some of which our current vaccines may not be able to protect against, and have to reinforce some of the restrictions that have come to infamously define much of 2020 and part of 2021. The reality is this scenario, the worst case, is entirely preventable. And that's because we have three different vaccines readily available to all of our residents, which offer very good protection against Delta and other new variants. Let's think back. This time last year, it was harder for us to even imagine a reality where we had a vaccine, much less be able to walk up and get one for free at a neighborhood health center or pharmacy. But now we are living that reality, and many of you had taken advantage of the vaccine that's been available now since December of last year.
Yeah, since December of last year, we're coming up on a year that the vaccine has been out. Okay, maybe in the first few months, it was hard to get. God knows I was trying to work every angle. I didn't get vaccinated till April. But now that's not the case. You don't have to step on anybody. You don't have to misrepresent yourself. You don't have to drive 100 miles. You can get the vaccine pretty much anywhere. So you know what? If you feel it's your God-given right to die from COVID, so be it. But don't take kids with you, okay? Don't do that. And yes, I know the majority of kids get very mild cases of COVID, and that's great. That's great. That really is great. Do you want to take the chance that your kid's going to be one of those? You want to spin that roulette wheel and hope it lands where you want it to? Because when your kid gets sick, suddenly the odds don't really mean anything. Suddenly it's very personal. That was one of the things that was really brought home to me when Bill Plaschke, the sports writer for the LA Times, he was one of the earliest people to get COVID. And he said, you know, he's a healthy guy in his 50s. But he said as he was walking around in the middle of the night having trouble breathing, all he could think of was, sure, you know, 90-some plus people get better. But what if that's not me? What if I've drawn the short straw? You want to play with our kids like that? Just assume that because most kids don't get very sick, that yours won't, or your neighbors won't, or all the other kids that your kids are friends with won't. Yeah. You feel lucky? I don't know that I've ever felt that lucky. Oh, and here's a little interesting thing. For those of you who, and I know if you're a regular listener to this show, you're probably not a regular watcher of Fox News. But I do know that people like Paul from Seattle and others drop in on Fox News from time to time to sort of see what the other half is saying. In the last week or so, hosts on Fox News have started trying to encourage people to get vaccinated. It happened on Fox and Friends. Even Sean Hannity said that he believed in vaccination, he believed in the science, and he believed in getting vaccinated. Now, this could have something to do with a report that was leaked by CNN Business. They got a hold of a memo that had to do with a program that the Fox headquarters was instituting to, it was going to be voluntary, it was going to be an honor system, but they wanted to make sure that everybody who worked there reported their vaccination status so that they could decide, you know, who would sit where, what the social distancing would be, who needed to wear masks. So, you know, those vaccine passports that Tucker Carlson's been bashing? under a different name is exactly what his company is doing. And if you know anybody who watches Fox News, and heaven help, is a follower of Tucker Carlson, do you really believe that Tucker Carlson isn't vaccinated? Do you really believe that? I believe they're all vaccinated. I believe that every host on Fox News is fully vaccinated. And it seems like they're starting to kind of admit it. Let's hope it helps. I mean, let's hope it helps. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Renato Mariotti. Yesterday, you may have seen on social media, there was a hashtag that was trending, Fire Merrick Garland. His defense of Donald Trump in his suit against E. Jean Carroll the woman who says he raped her. He said she lied. She said he was defaming her. That was bad. He apparently also now is refusing to prosecute a member of Congress who lied in testimony to, he was the U.S. Commerce Secretary. Wilbur Ross testified before Congress and flat out lied. And those lies have been documented. And it looks like Merrick Garland has decided not to go after him either. There's another question the DOJ is going to have to wrestle with soon. Eric Swalwell is suing Mo Brooks. And Mo Brooks has gone to the DOJ and said, you know, you're defending Trump in this E. Jean Carroll thing. Well, the same principle applies to me. I'm a government official, and everything I said or did was in my official capacity. Therefore, you should defend me against this suit filed by Eric Swalwell. We've yet to hear from the DOJ on that. I'm going to talk to Renato Mariotti about all of this when we come back after this.
Don't want to call but have something to say?
Am I on the air?
You can now text us at 773-763-9278. WCPT's text line is sponsored by GWC Injury Lawyers. Visit them at justicestartstoday.com.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT 820.
Former federal prosecutor Renato Mariotti joins us. He also writes for Politico.com. Welcome, Renato. It is a pleasure to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Glad to be back on.
Okay. When you and I were on before, I was railing about Merrick Garland. You were explaining to me his judicial mindset, which is not prosecutorial so much as it is fair and balanced and listening to everybody. What the heck is behind this decision, apparently, not to prosecute former U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who apparently rather blatantly lied to Congress in his testimony? Isn't that against the law, Renato?
Well, it is against the law. That said, I will just say that it is harder to prove that somebody lied to Congress than you might think. So let me explain why that is. As somebody who's been in the situation of having to prove why somebody lied, whether it's to the FBI or Congress, it's the same law. So essentially, you have to prove not just that somebody said something that was false, but you have to prove that at the time that they said it, they knew it was false, and they were saying it with the intent to deceive, in this case, Congress. Now, maybe you could prove that. But you have to understand that the burden of proof for prosecutors beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's not, you know, if there's any doubt or any benefit of the doubt, it's going to go to the jury is supposed to give it to Ross, not to the prosecutors. And the evidence is probably just going to essentially be, and in my understanding in the Ross situation, what it was is there was communications that indicated, for example, that the decision was made at a different time than he testified that it was, or with different considerations. He's going to say, his excuse is going to be, his story is going to be, hey, I didn't remember that at the time. I was mistaken.
Oh.
I made a mistake. As he's going to say, well, that's fine. But oh, come on is not going, you know, that's the defense. That's not that's an argument. You know, you get what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah, I don't recall. I'm sorry, I can't recall. I can't recall. How many times have we heard people saying that to whether it is lawyers or in a deposition or to Congress? Oh, I didn't recall that. I really can't recall.
Yep. And that's what it is. Oh, hey, look, I mean, there's always some other story that the defense is going to present. And at times it can be so ridiculous that the jury will discount it. Like, oh, you know, I just happened to be on the scene of the drug deal because I was shopping at that mall on that day. Okay. Something like that. Like, oh, I just happened to be there with the drug. But here, you know, this is the sort of thing, you know, can they prove what was in his mind? You know, I just came back from a courthouse today. where I was watching an opening statement where that was the entire focus of a criminal trial was what's going on in this guy's mind. And so I guess I think this is the fault line in a lot of trials. And it's very well may be that there were improper considerations made here, like the Garland Justice Department was focused on not looking like they were overturning what the Trump Justice Department did, or they may give more weight to that. But I don't know that. And I'm just saying on the face of it, these can be challenging cases to bring. That's all.
Okay. Well, were you surprised when you saw the hashtag Fire Merrick Garland that was trending on Twitter, which means that it was repeated thousands and thousands of times?
You know, I'm not entirely surprised because people have been getting pretty angry with Merrick Garland. I have to say, the part of it is unrealistic expectations, and I fault influencers, people like myself, not me personally. I don't think I did this, but I think there's a lot of people who set expectations that as soon as Joe Biden was our president and Merrick Garland was our attorney general, that we would see Donald Trump in handcuffs, that we would see all of his administration officials facing some very serious consequences. And you know, it's not entirely clear that that was going to happen or when that was going to happen. I mean, we just saw today Tom Barak, I think, is a confidant of Trump's got arrested today.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
seems to know why.
Yeah, you know, I think it's related to this inaugural investigation the Southern District or Eastern District of New York have, what some federal prosecutors in New York have had for some time. So some fraud related to the inaugural committee is what I think that this is related to. But I don't know. I don't know for sure. I know that there is a Justice Department press release, which I haven't had the time to review because I've been in court today myself. But I will just say that I think there will be some action that is taken. But I think it's fair to say that it's not going to be what you and I in our wildest dreams want happening to Trump and his crew, because I think a lot of people rightfully feel that Trump betrayed his country, that Trump and a lot of people in the Trump administration were leading that insurrection or encouraging that insurrection on the Capitol. And people want to see some accountability there. And I think what we're learning is really there's not a lot of accountability. It's very hard to obtain that accountability. And I will say this. I'm not going to defend every decision Merrick Garland has made. But I do think that if you replace Merrick Garland, that we would see hashtags fire the next person whenever that happens.
Okay. All right. I will not... I will not dump on Merrick Garland for the Wilbur Ross decision, but I'm telling you, if Merrick Garland decides that the DOJ is going to defend Mo Brooks in the lawsuit that's been filed by his colleague, Eric Swalwell, because Mo Brooks is making the same argument that was apparently used to justify the continuing defense of Trump in the defamation suit with E. Jean Carroll, yeah, that he was, you know, doing his presidential business. Mo Brooks said, because Eric Swalwell filed suit against him because saying that he was partially responsible for the January 6th insurrection. And if Mo Brooks is saying, hey, same principle, I was acting in my capacity as a government official, Merrick Garland, you should defend me in this lawsuit. What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, wow. Well, just if Garland, if they certify that he was acting in the scope of his government employment, not only would the Justice Department defend the case, but then the United States would be substituted as the party, and the case would be dismissed. Swalwell's case would be dismissed. So it would be very significant. I have to say, I'm concerned about what the Justice Department is going to do there, because they've built up this body of decisions and case law, these precedents that they've built up. And essentially what those decisions say, they do is they interpret very broadly what the scope of a government employment does. And by doing it, they can get a lot of lawsuits dismissed against government employees. And that's often in the interest of the government because they don't want to spend resources defending government employees who do bad things, whether it's a shooting or a improper speech or activity or whatever. They want to just get rid of the lawsuits, which this does. But the downside of it is that justice is not always done in individual cases. And I do think that having Brooks represented by the government or his actions in any way, there's an essence in which, while that's not the case, it would seem like it was being sanctioned by the government if
exactly
that application was made. I think that would be a very, very difficult message to send. I really hope the Garland Justice Department does not do that.
I really hope so, too, because I think that there are a lot of politicians, regular folks, activist groups that are really taking a hard look at Merrick Garland. And if he decides to defend Mo Brooks, I'm telling you that it may not happen right away, but that will be the final nail in his coffin, and Biden will get rid of him. I really believe that. I think the hue and cry is going to be something that Biden decides is too much trouble. That's my prediction, Renato. I don't know if you agree with me.
You know, I do think that the cry is going to be out there. It'll be interesting to see if President Biden cares about it. It'll be interesting to see. I will say this. I am concerned about sending the right message to the Mo Brookses of the world, because we are starting to see the next generation of Republican leaders adopt the you know, anti-democratic, authoritarian tropes that Trump was pushing. You know, we're seeing J.D. Vance. You know, J.D. Vance, I went to Yale Law School. J.D. Vance, so did J.D. Vance. Not, you know, very similar paths in life. J.D. Vance is a very intelligent man who knows better and was a big critic of public critic of Trump back in 2016. Now suddenly peddling a lot of falsehoods, pushing, pushing these false narratives and doing it, I think, knowingly. And I've always said that, Joan, what scares me more than Trump is a very smart authoritarian who, unlike Trump, is competent and is going to use the power that Trump was trying to gather for himself in a very intelligent way to undermine our system of government. And I worry about if we give license to the Mo Brookses of the world, that the next person who might arise is going to be a Trump 2.0 who's more devious.
That is exactly what I'm afraid of, too. Renato, thank you so much. I know how busy you are. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to us about this. Thank you, my friend.
Anytime.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Facebook.
Message us.
Instagram.
Follow us.
Twitter.
Tweet us.
They keep me connected.
Let's get social on the socials. WCPT 820. Don't turn that dial.
A dangerous mistake to make.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive. Returns right now on WCPT 820.
As part of our regular Union Strong segments, we talk to various union representatives and labor leaders. And today we're talking to Elbert Walters III. We call him Bert, director of Powering Chicago. Bert, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Joan, for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Now, just to be clear, you represent Powering Chicago is represents IBEW 134 and NECA. Is that correct?
Yes, Powering Chicago represents the unionized electrical industry here in Cook County, and that includes the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 134, and the Electrical Contractors Association of the City of Chicago in Cook County, where we consistently invest in better construction, better careers, and better communities.
I one of the things that I like about your website is that you post different articles and other things of interest, and I was particularly struck by the Q&A you did with John Keener about the auto show. Tell me about that.
Yes, actually, that was a recent piece that we did highlighting the fact that Powering Chicago and its members are essential in really spurring economic cultivation and motivation within the Cook County, and more importantly, the McCormick Place venue. We know that's a big generator economically for this region. And we all remember when COVID first hit the area, we made a pivot to change that space into makeshift hospitals, right, to take care of those who were afflicted by the COVID-19 virus. Of course, with the fact that we are now transitioning back to opening up the city to some of those participants, some of those venues that want to make sure that they come out and take advantage of what McCormick Place has to offer, I thought it was very important, and we thought, as an industry, it's very important to know that we're all about not just making sure that Chicago thrives economically, but that when tying in everything, we're essential to everything that is Chicago. We were essential in making sure that they had the space for those when we needed them for their social issues, that we're here for the need for when they have medical issues. And then when it comes to making sure that economically Chicago is a thriving space, that we're here as well.
Do you think McCormick Place is back, or is it still just partially back?
Well, Joan, to be honest with you, I think that having an iconic event like the auto show come back and wanting to make sure that they partner with the McCormick Place, wanting to make sure that they take care of the Chicago market, is very important. And it is a sign that we're moving towards and moving in the right direction and making sure that Chicago is back where we need to be as far as a thriving city, both economically and socially. So in making sure that the McCormick Place auto show was promoted, this is the first big event, and there's more shows to come. So as we look at signs in the future, it looks quite promising.
Bert, how many of the IBEW workers will work a typical big show at McCormick Place like the auto show? Does it vary greatly from show to show? Like, oh, the auto show doesn't need very much in the way of, I don't know, lighting, but another show is going to need more. Does it vary from show to show, or is it pretty steady?
You know, that's a great question. Of course, depending on the size of the shows, which vary, it will change the number of, you know, labor that is needed for that particular site. So when we look at the McCormick Place Auto Show, for instance, prior to COVID, those numbers can be large. You know, when it looks at the manpower that it would take to put on a show like the auto show, you're talking about having all types of automobile industry makers there to showcase the goods and services that they have. Well, this year it's been severely scaled down. But again, we have the workforce that is trained. We have the workforce that can install some of the equipment and actually do some of the safety work that is needed without them having to worry about that workforce. So we're able to adjust to the customer's needs.
Bert, I know that I've talked to a lot of people in various construction industries, and luckily for them, Governor Pritzker declared their work essential. So a lot of those workers were able to continue to work throughout the pandemic. I know this is a really broad question, but how has the pandemic, if it has, how has it changed your workers or the work they do in what ways?
Well, that's another great question, John. And again, we're a microcosm of this country. We're a microcosm basically of our communities. And of course, COVID affected everyone differently. The fact of the matter is that when COVID hit, it did change and affect every industry. But one of the great things about our particular industry is that we are flexible in the way that we prepare our workforce. We were able to pivot our training center. At the time that we had apprentices and the apprenticeship was open, we were able to pivot from our current curriculum to incorporate some of the safety protocols that was mandated and coming down from the Illinois Department of Health. Right? And that's one of the great things about our industry and the fact that our partners understand not only that we are codependent on one another, but that we listen to what our stakeholders are concerned about. And being deemed essential, making sure that the water plants still work, making sure that the infrastructure that we depend on every day when we're talking about our laptops, when we're talking about even some of the smaller things like television, being able to communicate with one another with some of the mandates and some of the information that was coming across, our members are essential to that. We are the backbone of this Cook County area. We are the backbone of Chicago. We're essential because we make sure that some of those mission-critical items don't fail.
We're talking with Elbert Burt Waters III with Powering Chicago. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Burt is actually going to be part of a panel that is taking place this Thursday. If I will tweet out a link to it if you want to sign up for it. A very nice PR picture attached of Burt, looking fine in that photo. Burt, we're going to talk to you about what you're going to be saying and what people need to know about the future of the Chicago Suburbs panel when we come right back after this.
Can't listen to Joe Esposito?
Surely you can't be serious.
Live, local, and progressive in your car today?
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Don't fret. You can still listen to her on the TuneIn app on both your phone and computer.
Whoa! You feel that right away. It's just refreshing.
You're listening to WCPT 820, because facts matter.
Now back to Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT 820.
We are doing our regular Union Strong segment where we talk to union leaders throughout the Chicago area. We're talking with Elbert Waters III, who is the director of Powering Chicago. And if you would like to hear more of what Burt has to say, I have tweeted out a link to a panel that he is going to be a part of, the Future of the Chicago Suburbs event. Okay, Burt, what are you going to tell us about the future of the Chicago Suburbs this coming Thursday?
Well, of course, I don't want to give away all the information.
Yo, come on. Give us a sneak peek about something.
Of course. But I will share this. Again, we know that during COVID, there was a transition for everyone to move to away from the urban areas, and we've seen some construction and a movement within the suburbs. And so we're going to be talking about that and what does the future look like for those suburban areas and what are some of the challenges and what we see coming forward. And so I'm excited about being on that panel, sharing what it is that I have to see from our members, from our partners, and for what the outlook looks like for the suburbs. So, again, if you want to hear some great information from some great panelists, I urge you all to join that series, that Biz Now series. And again, make sure you log on, make sure you be a part of that conversation. And if you have any questions, please pose, because we encourage engagement.
You know, one of the things that I know you guys are going to be talking about is something that I have observed. Heck, everybody's observed it. There seems to be, because of the pandemic, retail seems to be struggling, whether it's a mini mall by your house or a big mall, or heck, even, you know, the little shops that are in your downtown area. When retail suffers like that, and particularly, you know, construction of these bigger box stores and that, does that have an effect on the number of people you can put to work?
Well, of course, again, we understand that there are certain challenges that face the suburban area and the suburban market. Of course, our concern is more so making sure that our partners install the best quality and have the best skilled individuals that work on those institutions, so we don't have situations that happen in Florida. Well, we go with substandard quality work type of work in order to make sure that the suburban has the market. But again, there's other situations that affect the suburban market when it comes to making sure the retail stores are there, because the most suburban areas struggle with tax generation basis, meaning most of the suburbs are residential in nature. And so it's difficult for them to continue to have infrastructure upgrades when the only people who can actually support that are the residences, right? And we see what happens with taxes, but that's not my expertise. I just want to make sure that it's noted that our focus is to make sure that they have the same quality and standards of installation, they have access to the same highly skilled, well-trained workforce and opportunities that Every area has. Me at the north side, me at the city of Chicago. This is all one Cook County, and we all deserve the best. And that's what we're here to provide.
Well, speaking of that, Bert, as you look at your union and talk to the people who do this kind of work, what is the biggest concern? And going forward, what also is your biggest opportunity, would you say? Not that, you know, I realize that these questions are very broad. So answer them as you will in any context, whether it's local, statewide, or national. You know, things that your members are concerned about and what you see as a big opportunity going forward.
Well, Joan, again, when you had me on the show last, and again, that's a great question. You're absolutely right. As a broad stroke, it covers a lot of bases, and we can talk about a lot of things. But I think one of the most important things that we cannot look over is the fact that we want to make sure that there is opportunity for all. We want to make sure that there's opportunity for all of Cook County and its residents. And we understand that there is an outlook as far as how the unions are represented. And one of the reasons why I'm so excited to be the executive director for Power in Chicago is that now there's an opportunity to have a voice that can express the concerns of our community members. And that's the wonderful thing about Power in Chicago specifically, is that they are about inclusion. We are adamant about making sure that we are part of the community. We have exposure programs. We have joint ventures with different Chicago public area high schools. We are actually looking to extend that to the south suburbs. So, again, making sure that there's opportunity so that when work is here, there's a conduit, no pun intended, or maybe there is a pun intended there. There is a conduit to make sure that there's opportunity for all. And as far as, making sure that we share this information, I think that's one of the biggest things, and that's the challenge right now, is making sure that there are no more closed ears and covered eyes when it comes to what it is that we're trying to do. And that kind of flares squarely on my foot and in my plate. And so along with my partners, ECA and IBW Local 134, we're working very diligently in making sure that message gets across.
I've done a lot of interviews with various union folks for the last few years. And almost every time back when I was in the studio, we would get somebody calling and wanting the unions to talk about minority recruitment or accusing them of not really being welcoming to minorities. Are people surprised that when they see you as an African-American man leading a union? What are some of the things, what are some of the reactions that you've gotten?
Well, to be quite honest with you, Joan, our union, IBW Local 134, has had African-American representation in statuses of leadership within the structure for quite some time. I'm standing on the shoulders of a lot of individuals right now. And that's the beauty of being a part of an organization that understands and sees the benefit of that. There are some people who are surprised. But again, we're working more and more to make sure that we're more prevalent and we're more open and we're engaged. And that's something that I think that other organizations, labor unions, are quite frankly becoming part of right now.
So are people surprised when they meet you, Bert? I mean, you know, I mean, I only say this because I get so much, I get so many listeners texting and sending me messages on Facebook, you know, and they're like, oh, you know, I don't care what they say. The trades are not open to minority people and they're not open to women. I'm sure you get that, too. Aside from, hey, look at me, I'm proof. What else can you tell people?
Well, again, first of all, let me first go back and say, well, thank you, because when they see me, they are surprised. They don't say that I'm just as good looking as my photo that you mentioned at the beginning of the break. But what they
I thought you missed that.
No, I did not. But they are surprised. But then once they find out my commitment and our commitment as far as powering Chicago and our partners to the community, the conversation begins to change, and it becomes less accusational, and it's more informational. Like, well, how can we work together? And again, we've sat down and spoken with community leaders. We've developed relationships with church organizations, pre-apprenticeship programs, and we're open to all. This is no secret. We're encompassing everybody because we really believe that if you show what you can do, it's not about what we can say. You can tell me anything, but the proof is always in the pudding, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you uncover the veil, when you pull everything back, you'll find out that we're very, very active in making sure that this opportunity is available for all.
Talk to me about the We Are Powering Chicago social media campaign. What does that entail?
Yes. So, of course, one of the things that I think came out of this whole pandemic, when we look at how Chicago functions, is the fact that most individuals really take for granted how electricity is essential to everyone. And we understand that as electricians, we work around a silent killer every day. Electricity is, and I'm not trying to make the comparison to COVID because there is no comparison. However, COVID is silence. We don't know. The same thing with electricity. But the fact that we are well-trained and well-informed allows us to work around that with the minimal accident or minimal death incidents. And I think that when you look, when you make the comparison as far as how essential it is for us to have electricity, to have a dependable infrastructure, to make sure that hospitals are functioning, data centers are able to transmit and receive critical information, you begin to really sit down and think, you know, man, are we really depend on electricity? And with us being deemed essential workers, I think that it was prevalent upon the community to know that, listen, we've been here. We've been here for over 100 years. We're here during COVID, and we plan to be here as long as there is a planet Earth and there is a Cook County and there is a Chicago. Because, again, our members come from the community. We're here. We live in the community. And, again, what's important to our community is important to us. And so when our families are being stricken by COVID, when we're dealing with social issues, when we're dealing with everything that it makes up Chicago, we, by default, we deal with that. And we talk about that, and we work with that. So with Powering Chicago, we wanted to make sure that with this campaign, we show the faces of those who are essential workers. Not taking anything away from the doctors or the nurses, because we need that, and that is vital. But we were behind the scenes making sure that they were able to perform that critical mission-critical work, my apologies, so that when their services are needed, it was there to provide without any breaks, without any delays, without any problems. And so I'm very proud of my members. I'm very proud of my partners for standing up, being ready for the call when they were called.
How many people volunteered to have their pictures taken and be a part of the campaign?
Well, we're working on that right now, and it's going along very, very well right now. We're still in the stages of making sure that everyone goes out and takes those pictures. We're hoping to have so many pictures that everyone will feel slighted because they didn't get theirs. But right now, it's going very well. I have to make sure I take down all of my submissions, and that might bring the numbers down a little bit. I got to make sure I stay out of the media. But the main thing is to so that our members are engaged, so that they understand and know that we recognize who they are and that we recognize what we mean to this great city of Chicago and the great county of Cook.
Bert, if you need any pictures of somebody who's a member of SAG-AFTRA, I can send you a few of those. I won't be able to use the hashtag Powering Chicago Proud, but I probably could get away with the hashtag Union Essential Worker, though a lot of people would debate how essential I truly am.
Well, I can tell you this. If downloading your picture and having it on my computer counts, I already got it. You don't have to worry about that.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. As we wrap this up, Bert, I want to give you 30 seconds, if you will. What is the most important thing you would like my audience to know about Powering Chicago?
Well, that's a great question, and it won't take me 5 minutes. It probably will take me less than 5 seconds, really. But I just want to make sure that our partners, Powering Chicago partners, know that we are here for our stakeholders, and that is the customers and the end users. And so when it comes to anything that you need as far as electrical work, please visit poweringchicago.com. When the pandemic came out, just to try to reiterate how we work with the community, and we're not just here just to grab work, but however, we're here to make sure that our communities thrive. We developed a contactless office campaign And this particular campaign stressed the technology that is out to make sure that when we do return to work, like this time right now, we have contactless options that will make the employees feel safe when they return to work. So if you're interested in this technology or want to find out more about the offerings that Powering Chicago and the unionized electric industry can provide for you and whatever electrical needs that you have, please visit poweringchicago.com. You can reach me at ewalters@poweringchicago.com, or you can go to poweringchicago.com.
Wow, giving out your email address over the radio, that's a brave man. And if you do want to see the Future of Chicago Suburbs panel that is this Thursday morning, I have tweeted out a link to it. It will take you to the Powering Chicago page, and there's a little thing there that you can click and sign yourself up. Bert, thank you so much. I enjoy talking with you. And even if I'm not going to be a part of your new social media campaign, I am still grateful to have you here on the radio with me.
Thank you, Joan. It's a pleasure. I really appreciate and enjoy having a conversation on an outlet and a medium like this. I thank you so much for the work that you do.
Well, it is a mutual admiration society, Bert. Thank you. I am going to take a break right now, and when we come back, I'm going to be talking with a friend of the show, Mark Jacob. He is currently working with Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern, but before that, he was an editor at the Chicago Tribune. He was an editor at the Chicago Sun-Times, and we have a lot to talk about with him. And one of the things that I'm going to be sharing with you, couple of things, actually. There was a heated interchange between Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci. Rand Paul, what a piece of work. And I remember I told you that Fox News is now trying to push vaccinations. I got some of that, too. We'll be back with more right after this.
Podcasts of Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive, are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and SoundCloud. Just search WCPT 820. Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive.
Quite frankly, I get most of my news from you.
Joan Esposito.
Y'all ready for this?
On WCPT 820.
One of the people I most like to talk about, Well, I do like to talk about you, too, but I also like to talk with Mark Jacob. He comes from a long journalism background, and like me, he is now freed from the constraints of unbiased reporting and can have opinions. Welcome, Mark. I do talk about you sometimes, so actually that was accurate as well.
Well, good. Yeah. And we do have informed opinions, I hope. You know, and based
yes.
on facts still. We still have not abandoned facts.
Yes, yes. There are so many things that I want to talk to you about. First of all, let's start with the seeming change of mind at Fox News. The fact that on their Fox and Friends Morning Love Fest, there are now at least one of the three members has been telling people, you know, this whole vaccination thing's a pretty good idea and you right. should really get vaccinated. And the one that just really shocked me most of all, Sean Hannity. Damien, I think you have Sean Hannity's clip from Fox. Okay. Well, Matt sent it over about a half an hour ago. Got it? I'm sorry, I didn't hear
just
you. Do
like
you have
we've
it?
Been saying, please take COVID seriously. I can't say it enough. Enough people have died. We don't need any more death. Research like crazy. Talk to your doctor, your doctors, medical professionals you trust based on your unique medical history, your current medical condition, and you and your doctor make a very important decision for your own safety. Take it seriously. You also have a right to medical privacy. Doctor-patient confidentiality is also important. And it absolutely makes sense for many Americans to get vaccinated. I believe in science. I believe in the science of vaccination.
I got to tell you, up until he said that, I wasn't quite so sure that Sean Hannity did believe in the science of vaccination.
Well,
what do you think is behind this turnaround?
You know, it just sounds like the thing you hear at the end of, you know, medical prescription commercials, you know, or, you know, talk to your doctor, or this may not be safe for all people, you know, it just, it feels disclaimer-like. To me, it's one of those things where you think you might get sued, so you quickly say something that might help you in the lawsuit. So many times people on Fox News have been undermining confidence in the vaccine. So many times, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of times, including Hannity. And so for him to make that statement now with belatedly, you know, better than he make it than he not make it. But come on. I mean, I didn't watch Hannity last night because I had much better time than that. But but I did see something on social media that suggested that he also had a lot of other, he made other comments and had other guests on in the same show that were undermining confidence in the vaccine. I mean, they keep on, Joan, they keep on saying facts that don't make, that are maybe true, but don't make any sense or don't, they're misleading. For example, Marjorie Taylor Greene keeps on saying, well, 6,000 people who got the vaccine have died. Which I think may be true, but you think about how many millions of the vaccine were given out and think about how many.
And the implication being what when she says something like that, she's trying to lead people to think that they died because of the vaccine, not right. that there were people who died for other reasons.
Well, 6,000 people who drank milk in the last 2 months have died too, probably. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, come on, you know, so they're using all these weird facts to undermine confidence. And, you know, also Green, for example, I mean, I know she's kind of a wing nut, but she's not that far from Hannity, unfortunately. And, you know, she also, you know, said yesterday, that's why she got suspended, is she said something about how she said that it's not dangerous. The virus is, quote, not dangerous unless you're obese or over age 65. Well, I went and looked up the statistics when I saw that. And 120,000 Americans under the age of 65 have died from the virus. I mean, so that's why they suspended her for 12 hours. Is it just an outrageous lie? But so I don't think that you're seeing the turnaround on Fox News. And Joan, I'd be curious why you think Fox News is so disinforming on the vaccine. I mean, why have they not reined it in to actually encourage people to use the vaccine until now? And now it's even now it's spotty, I must say. But why? I have my own theory, but I was curious what yours was.
Well, I think that I agree with what you touched on. It does indeed sound like a legal disclaimer. CNN was reporting earlier today that there have been private talks going on between Fox executives and the White House to try to get them to stop spreading vaccine disinformation. Was there a threat that they would sic the DOJ on them or the FCC, for God's sake? I don't know, but it does. You're absolutely right. It sounds like, well, you know, when the whole voting machine thing was a big thing on Newsmax and OANN, and then Dominion said that they were going to file a multi-billion-dollar suit against Newsmax, and suddenly you had people reading these, we do not believe, despite what our guests say, you know, we do not believe that the voting machines in any way, shape, or form led to a fraudulent election. The voting machines are very safe. We know they're very safe. And every anchor read the same statement.
Right.
You know, it was like read it once an hour. I think two things about Fox. First and foremost, they don't care about anything but profits. They don't care about misinformation. They don't care about the people who they mislead. They care about making money. And the other thing, I think Rupert Murdoch is a white supremacist contrarian. And I don't know if you saw that. I think it was, what was it, on Deadspin? A former Fox executive, somebody who had access to the literal highest levels of power. And who they wrote this op-ed. And it was, I've known Rupert Murdoch for a long time. I was an executive at Fox. I know Rupert Murdoch to be a kind and generous man. And I tried in my last months, years at Fox so many times to try to get him to see what a disservice he was doing to the United States by the kind of content that was on. And, right. You know, it was like the guy couldn't reconcile the man he knew personally with the vitriol that the man was profiting from. And he said, I finally realized that I was never going to get through to him. That whether, you know, and he was very kind. He said, he's just a contrarian. Like, if you tell him not to do something, that's what he's going to want to do. I think that is overly generous, how anybody could not see the damage that Fox is doing and has done to this country. I think it's more than being a contrarian. I think that, you know, Rupert Murdoch is truly a bad human being. And when he, I think he's like almost 90 now, I don't know. But when his son Lachlan is finally given the reins, I'm really curious to see whether or not there will be any kind of change. And here's why. I think Lachlan's brother's name is James, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. No, that's right.
My partner, Ray, used to be in the music business, as was James. And they kind of tangentially knew each other. And Ray has always said to me, I just don't understand it because James is a good guy. And for a while, Rupert brought James in, and supposedly James was supposed to be the counterbalance, you know, the maybe not liberal, but the at least more progressive voice to try to balance things. And if you may remember, like a year or two ago, James quit. He walked mm-hmm. away, and he said, I am not having any impact. I am not changing anything. You know, basically nobody's listening to me. So screw it. You know, I'm out of here.
Well, Joan, you hear people say that it doesn't make any sense for Fox to attack vaccines because they're only killing their own customers. But
yeah.
I look at this and I think, and I'm sad to say it, but I think that a likely theory is that they've done cost benefit analysis and they've decided, well, if, you know, some less than 1% of their viewership dies because they didn't take the vaccine, the other 99 will be more loyal, more paranoid, more ignoring of any other media source than Fox. And so in the long run, it'll work out just fine for them. And the idea of doing cost benefit analysis with your audience dying of a pandemic is pretty sad, but I don't see any other logical explanation for their behavior. I mean, because they know the vaccine works, but yet they keep on day after day, you know, with Tucker Carlson especially, bringing on people who say the vaccine doesn't work and say that, you know, the vaccine got this person sick and that we don't know it works and doesn't work on the variant and various other lies that are not science. Mm-hmm. And so it seems illogical, but the only way but with Fox, and as you say, it's all about the money and power. They, you know, if you look for that, if you look at it that way, the only way that makes sense to me is that they just have decided that it's worth it if some of their audience dies for the rest of their audience to become more loyal and make more money.
Ugh. I am speaking with Mark Jacob. He is a former editor at the Trib and the Sun-Times. He's currently working with the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern. We're going to open up the phone lines, 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. We've got a lot to talk about. We want you to be a part of the conversation. We're going to get to your calls right after this.
There's no excuse to miss Joan Esposito.
It's number one on my stereo.
Live, local, and progressive. You can listen to her daily at WCPT820.com on your computer or phone.
Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT 820.
I'm speaking with Mark Jacob. He's a former editor at the Sun-Times and the Trib. He is now with the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. We have been talking about a strange change of course that seems to be taking place in certain segments of Fox News, where at least a couple of hosts now suddenly are trying to tell people that the vaccine is good, it's reliable, and they should get it. We have a caller, Mark. Steve is calling in from the Gold Coast to join our conversation. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And I want to make a couple of points. And I too have heard the stories about Fox having met with representatives at the White House in terms of their coverage of this topic. And before we start giving Fox too much credit, let's keep in mind that they, as a network, represent a divergent set of interests. And in the wake of the election and the big lie and the storming of the Capitol on January 6th, you know, whenever they started to moderate their message, they saw a large chunk of their audience peeled off to places like Newsmax and One American News and so forth. So they're really trying to thread the needle in terms of having that balance. And part of it, I think that they've come to realize is that, you know what, the stock market just tanked yesterday, the largest decline since March. And they realized that, you know, the people whose interests we service in many ways on Fox are, you know, big businesses, you know, corporations. And if we keep pushing this, you know, we may see America fall backwards, you know, into perhaps another lockdown, more mask mandates, all of this sort of thing, which is not good for the people who pay our bills and donate to us and do all sorts of other things. So how do they serve both of those interests? And I think that that's why you're seeing this moderation of their message, because, you know, the companies that are worried about, you know, where are we go, who are we going to sell to, the cruise lines, the restaurants, the hotels, the airlines, the automobile rental agencies, all of these people have been impacted by this prospect that we could be sliding backwards. And when you forward a message that promotes that, then you may get some backlash. And I get the feeling that some of their, you know, corporate clients may have called in to say, hey, you know what, you guys need to push the right message. We need to get people vaccinated and get this economy moving, because that's our bottom line.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, Steve, because one of our listeners texted in that they think that Sean Hannity was urged to get people vaccinated because of the stock market decline. So just that, exactly what you're talking about, that sick people hurt the bottom line. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, they serve a divergent set of interests.
Yeah.
Well, I do wonder whether, though, that they wouldn't mind seeing the economy tank if they could blame it on Biden and get, you know, Trump or somebody else reelected in 2024. So, yeah, I wonder about that. They seem to welcome bad news as long as they can blame it on Biden. So, but you, Steve, you may have a point. That may be, that could be the reason, because, you know, obviously another recession is not good for anyone, including Biden,
yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phone lines. Ike is calling in from Charleston. Hello, Ike. You're on with Joan and Mark Jacob.
Hey, Joan, y'all. Hey, how y'all doing? Listen, you know, to me, I continue to be frustrated because I think that the root of all of this comes from that nasty cabal that's propping up talk radio. And I still say talk radio has done more damage to this country than any other operation. And it's been ignored and people don't talk about it. If it wasn't for CPT and a few stations that we have, I wouldn't be able to talk to anything, or, you know, I wouldn't be able to call in anywhere, because I've been banned on so many right-wing talk stations and programs. It's ridiculous. They don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to talk about the truth. And, you know, it's a failure of the FCC and including Fox News. I've got another thing. Listen, Fox News, when it comes down to Murdoch, if you want to see who he really is, 60 Minutes Australia did a expose on him, and the reason why they took away all of his toys in Australia and basically kicked him out of the country. He's a fascist, and he's a well-known fascist, and he does not care. He's just the nastiest, evilest family of people. And you can say his son's okay, but to tell you the truth, you're right. They don't care about nothing but money. But I've got another theory for you as well. I'm beginning to think that, and I've been wondering for quite a while, as a matter of fact, how come Pfizer and Moderna hadn't stepped up to the plate like that voting machine people did and said, you know what, if you keep relying on our vaccine and the work that we've done, you're basically calling us something other than what we are. We're trying to save people, and you're presenting a detriment, and you're presenting lies about us and our company, and we're going to take you to court and sue the living daylights out of you. And
that, I think, Ike, is brilliant. I think that is a brilliant idea. If Dominion and smart tech can do it, why not Moderna and Pfizer? Thank you, Ike. I appreciate the call. What do you think, Mark?
Well, that's really an interesting thought. But I feel like Moderna and Pfizer are thinking that if they were to do that, that it would really even more make it a political decision and would not induce anyone to get the vaccine. I mean, the real problem we have now, I think, is that Trump and others have turned it into a political decision, you know, that if that you're refusing to get the vaccine to own the libs, in effect. You know, and that's one of his statements a couple days ago was Trump's statement was that the reason that people won't get the vaccine is they don't trust Biden because he stole the election from me. You know, so we're directly tying in his big lie to the vaccine and in effect making it a loyalty test. So I think that Moderna and Pfizer rightly would think at this point, at least, that if they were to do that, they would simply just push everyone into their own corners and not get any new people.
And to be clear, I mean, Dominion didn't file those suits just because they wanted to make a statement. Dominion is an international company, and by all accounts, some of the other countries that use their equipment started contacting them and say, well, you know, we've got this big contract with you, but we're going to cancel it because your voting machines are fraudulent and they don't work right. So they did stand to lose a ton of business. And toward Ike's, right before we go to break, real quickly, to Ike's other point about conservative radio, I remember reading, a year or two ago, long before he died, a politician, a right Republican politician, was talking about Rush Limbaugh. And early in his career, when Limbaugh was making a name for himself and taking all these positions, and the politician said he went to Limbaugh and he was like, oh, my God, you could be such a good force for us. Here's, you know, I want to talk to you about these issues and find out, you know, what your position is. And he said Limbaugh looked at him and he was like, he realized that Rush Limbaugh didn't have any positions, that Rush Limbaugh wanted to generate ratings. He wanted to be successful and he would say pretty much anything to stir the pot, to become famous, to become rich. And the politician said he walked away thinking at first that there was this great voice for their ideology and realizing that Rush Limbaugh had no ideology of his own. So there's a lot of truth to that.
Yes, that's what needs to be understood, is that people like Trump and like Limbaugh, they don't have ideology. They're not conservatives. They're nihilists. They are narcissists. They are people who are only in it for themselves, and they'll just play any angle they can play. The sad thing is that they're con artists who have duped a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just because you shout and pound the table doesn't mean that you really are passionate about what you're saying. A lot of times it's theater. Right. We've seen it over and over again.
Right.
We need to take a real quick break. Mark, Jacob, and I will be back with more of your calls right after this.
Don't want to call but have something to say?
Am I in the air?
You can now text us at 773-763-9278. WCPT's text line is sponsored by GWC Injury Lawyers. Visit them at justicestartstoday.com. You know what time it is? It's time to return to the best progressive talk show in Chicago.
I'm a longtime listener.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive. Now on WCPT 820.
I am joined by Mark Jacob, who is a former editor at The Trib and The Sun-Times. Now he is associated with Northwestern University. We have been talking about the turnabout. Okay, maybe that's too strong a word. A couple of the hosts on Fox. Yeah, okay, I don't know. I got too excited there, Mark. A couple of hosts on Fox have actually told their audience that the vaccine is a good thing and that they should get vaccinated. And it seems like a small thing, but coming from Fox News, it feels like a very, very big thing. And a lot of our listeners agree. Let's go back to the phone lines. Scott is calling in from Round Lake. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Well, two parts to that. The caller couple before me is wondering why there's not a lot of left-wing stations on the radio, because pretty much, I don't know if you'd be at the sponsorship of the swill you're spelling out, because Sean Hannity's been saying that for over a year since there was a vaccine out, and he always said, consult your doctor, do what you think is right, things like that. So I think the left really need to do some fact-checking.
Yeah, but
well,
you don't think
go ahead, Mark.
No, I'm just saying, you're saying that he has never made comments diminishing the effectiveness of the vaccine, or that people should, or the whole Biden rollout of the vaccine and that kind of stuff? Is that what you're saying?
No. I think that was the point of what he was saying, the call dropped. Just to put this into context, that's not really true. He may have said consult your doctor, like Mark said, as a legal disclaimer. But even when he did this soundbite, this 37's exhortation to his audience to get vaccinated, saying that he believes in vaccine science, he interviewed a young woman before that who is not getting vaccinated. And right after he made that statement, he did an interview with somebody who claims that they were seriously injured by the vaccine. So, you know, he's still not really, you know, fighting the good fight the way Scott would perhaps like to believe. I mean, giving a disclaimer about, heck, you know, I do a lot of medical subjects from time to time. And even when I give my advice and my opinion, I always say, you know what? You got to talk to your doctor, because everybody's different. And, you know, these decisions need to be made between you and your doctor, even if I talk about something that I believe is a good thing or something people should do. So that's kind of a cover your butt move.
And I'm also willing to say that Hannity hasn't been quite as bad as Laura Ingraham or Tucker Carlson, who are on either side of him and on the Fox, white supremacist to primetime lineup. But they, he's been bad, and he has not been good. And he has Trump's ear, so why isn't he like calling Trump and telling him to come out and hold a press conference and announce that everyone should take the vaccine? Why did Trump secretly get the vaccine?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that everything we've read indicates that Hannity has as much influence on Trump as anyone. And, you know, so right. The idea that Sean Hannity has been beating the drum for the vaccine forever is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Not as bad. He's been not as horrible as the others. I'm willing to concede that.
Sean Hannity, less horrible. There's a tagline. I think that could sell. It sounds like the beginning of a PR campaign. Let's go back to the phone lines. Stephen is calling in from Evanston. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
Hi. I got a question, and, you know, maybe your guests can answer it. I heard a news report that L.A. County is the biggest county population-wise in the United States, and they put a mask order out, and they go in the public place, mask up, because the infections are spreading exponentially, I guess, and hospitalizations are way up, and I did not get a number on the hospitalizations. I would imagine it'd be hundreds of people we're talking about hospitalized with COVID, but they said 100% of them, every single one of them had not been vaccinated. There wasn't one vaccinated person who had to be hospitalized with COVID. And, you know, it was the unvaccinated that were jamming the hospitals up out there. Is that true?
Well, figure I've seen has been over 99% nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Over 99%, but not 100%. I mean, there are people who have been hospitalized and who have COVID who have been vaccinated. You know, the truth of it is, if you look back at vaccinations, you know, for other illnesses, this one is a particularly good one. I mean, this has a really high percentage of people who don't get it who are vaccinated. But it's, nobody said that it's foolproof, that it's instantly you'll never get it. It happens. You know, in fact, the deal with the Texas Democrats who fled the state and went to D.C. They apparently infected
Were they sick or were they positive?
A few of them tested positive. I don't know that anybody was sick or hospitalized. You're absolutely right, Mark. Stephen, the figures that I've seen are that it's usually considered 99 point something percent of the people who are currently hospitalized and the people who are dying. There was just, I think it was just last week, and it was one of the southern states. I don't know if, I can't remember if it was Missouri or Mississippi, but in a 1 week period, everybody who died, 100% of the people who died in that week were people who had not been vaccinated. It really is becoming a huge problem in the unvaccinated.
It's a form of genetic thinning, selection, whatever you want to call it.
But the thing about that is,
grim way to put it.
I just wanted to blow up one thing that I've been hearing a lot, which is, well, they don't want to take the vaccine. That's their problem. They'll suffer for it. No, all of us will suffer for it, because the more people that have COVID, the more chance there is of having variants that ultimately some of those variants may not be blocked by the vaccine.
Yep. So, and this is the way I've been describing it. Yeah. Remember in high school science, you know, you had those little petri dishes that you used to have to grow stuff on. Consider your body as a petri dish. And if you have 1,000 people who are unvaccinated who get COVID, the COVID virus enters your body and then it mutates. It can mutate. That's where the virus mutates. And then, you know, you release back out into the wild these new versions of the virus. And if that keeps happening often enough, sooner or later, one of those mutations is going to be resistant to the vaccine. It hasn't happened yet, but it's just a numbers game. And if we keep playing the numbers, it is going to happen. And, you know, and then there's the breakthrough infections. I mean, I am recovered from blood cancer, but people who have active blood cancers are found to not respond as deeply, as thoroughly to the vaccine as others. And people like that, and who for other reasons, maybe they have a transplanted organ, maybe they don't respond to the vaccine exactly the way regular folks do. And sometimes those folks, and sometimes people who, for no apparent reason, but it's rare, can have what are called breakthrough infections. There was a big story in the Tribune. I'm sure you saw it, Mark, a month or two ago, about a man from the southwestern suburbs, 75-year-old guy, fully vaccinated, who went out to dinner a couple of times, got COVID, and ended up dying. He was suffering from a blood cancer, and it was found that he just didn't react to the vaccine the way hopefully I have and you have.
Right.
But the vast majority of these infections now are not these people.
Yeah, it's just not logical. It's not humane, but it's also not logical to say, well, just screw them. They won't get the vaccine. Whatever happens to them is okay. I mean, that's the thing about public health, Joan. I mean, it's public. It's everyone. I mean, it's all of us cooperating to keep all of us safe. It's not every man for himself. That's a real problem. And that, just to go on a mini rant here, that's kind of been the whole problem with the whole Trump right wing approach to the coronavirus. It's kind of been every man for himself. It's been, well, it's not going to kill me. You know, it's all been just very selfish. You know, and we're all supposed to be Americans. We're all supposed to care about each other, and we're supposed to like take care of each other. And that's not that. And that's why we need to urge people to get the vaccine. And that's why in my opinion, we need that, whatever you want to call it, vaccine passports or whatever. But I don't see why you should get on an airplane or get in public place with other people if you refuse to get the vaccine. You know, stay home and watch TV and, you know, do your own thing.
Yeah. Damien, while we were talking, did some research and found a Washington Post article that talked about Sean Hannity's flip-flopping when it comes to the vaccine. Here's how they put it. Fox News host Sean Hannity has been on something of a vaccine roller coaster. He said in January that he was beginning to have doubts about getting a shot, despite telling friends he was planning to get a shot. On his radio show last month, he said he was not anti-vaccine, but did not plan to reveal whether or not he eventually got the shot. I mean, good God. Right. Talk out of all right. the different sides of your mouth simultaneously, why don't you? Let's take a break. We have more callers waiting to join our conversation, Mark. We'll get to them right after this.
Podcasts of Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive, are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and SoundCloud. Just search WCPT 820.
Because facts matter. You're listening to WCPT 820.
Now back to Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT 820.
Mark Jacob is a former editor of The Trib and The Sun-Times. He is now working with Northwestern University's School of Journalism. He joins me. We have been talking about Fox News, at least a couple of their hosts now apparently in between all the disinformation, trying to get out a message that, maybe you should get vaccinated. We'll see. We'll see how that evolves. Let's go back to the phone lines. Paul is calling in from Seattle. Hey, Paul, you're on with me and Mark Jacob.
Hi, Joan. Hi, Mark. I'm thinking that Fox News better wake up and realize that man does not live on memes alone, nor are there mixed messages that come from the mouths of Fox News. A mixed message doesn't really, you can't say don't take the vaccine, or maybe you better. This suicide meme that they're on by telling their viewers don't get the vaccine, and now their viewers are going to develop that mindset. They're not going to shift the mindset. If they're sending a mixed message, they're just going to not trust Fox News. They're still not going to get the vaccine. But the problem with this whole idea that they're going to somehow make things worse and blame it on Biden, well, like the economy, for example. The problem is, all of these people, first of all, it's because their viewers are going to be sick. And while these viewers are primarily in red states, those states are not the hub of the national economy. So I don't think it will have some effect. But remember, in the 2016 election, Donald Trump won 2,600 counties across America that accounted for only 36% of the economic productivity. Hillary Clinton won 500 counties across America that accounted for 64% of the economic productivity. And it is essentially the blue states who are getting vaccinated. So life is going to start carrying on while the red states drop dead. I don't see how that really works for them. And they're holding out. They're holding out for, on a prayer, a Hail Mary and a prayer, that this orange dodo bird is going to return. And that just seems like that's a long shot bet. I wish them all the best, but I don't see how that plays out. I just don't see any of this working. I think it is going to crash things, but only for them. And they're going to be like the proverbial egg on their face holding the bag. I don't see this really. I think America does move on without them. That's what I think is going to happen.
What's your motive? Why are they doing it then?
The motive is this. They know that the tide has turned, and they know that people are waking up to the notion that the way to solve problems in this, the way we can solve a lot of problems in this country is a wealth tax. And they know this is why they're so invested in obstructing the vote in all these states, is because they know they're losing. You look at some of the states where they have Republican legislatures. Look at a big state like Michigan, all Republican legislature, but governors, secretary of state, attorney general, two U.S. senators, and Joe Biden won. All of those are statewide races. They are outnumbered in Michigan, and the only reason they still hold the legislature is because of the gerrymandering of the redistricting. And so they know that when the Democrats take power again, because Donald Trump ruined things so terribly, that we're going to start taxing the rich, because you know what? The rich stole $30 trillion from the economy over the last 30 years, which is why we have such a disparity in wealth, and they're sitting on it. It's not helping the economy. It's sitting in their bank accounts. It's not circulating in the economy. We have a junk food economy that's based on the stock market, and that doesn't work.
Well, toward your earlier point, Paul, it's easy, especially as someone who disagrees with many of the red states moves. It's easy to sit back and say, well, you know, they're idiots. Let them all die off. If it were only that simple, but even if their bodies weren't petri dishes trying to find ways for the virus to kill me, which is really my bottom line, I think of how many kids are going to end up in the hospital? Even if you say, you know, that it doesn't really affect a lot of kids. Okay, well, it doesn't. But if you're looking at a gene pool of millions, it, you know, a hundred, you know, a few thousand. And what if one of those is yours? That's where it just is so short-sighted, this whole attitude of let the red states just do what they want to do and the hell with them, and eventually the blue states will take over and we'll fix the economy and we'll fix the tax structure and we'll fix everything else. I don't know, Paul. I don't think I'm going to live that long. I don't think I can wait that out. Not that it's not, you know, something that I haven't thought of. I just don't know that I'm going to be the one to get us there. Thanks for those thoughts. Mark, you want to weigh in here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like that what we may be missing is that Fox doesn't need to win. Fox doesn't need to be in the majority. I mean, I'm sure they enjoyed the Trump presidency, but if they can keep enough of a group of people, enough customers paranoid, not trusting any other media, sure that everyone's out to get them, afraid of people of color, if they can keep a really solid base of scared white people watching only them, they can make money. And that's a formula for them. And I don't think they necessarily need to get in the majority in order to make a lot of money. And so they may enjoy being in the minority. They may not care if they win or not.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to figure out exactly what their motivations are. I know that recently somebody wrote an interesting op-ed directed at Paul Ryan, the former Speaker of the House who now sits on the Fox board. And they were like, hey, Paul Ryan, you know, time to make a difference. Time to talk to your fellow board members and say, you know what, maybe we ought to shift a little, at least on one or two issues. And, of course, from Paul Ryan, there was radio silence. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's get one more call in before we go to break. Gus is calling from Logan Square. Hey, Gus, how are you?
How are you doing, Joan? Great to be on the show. And it's funny because you're talking about Sean Hannity. Right after I talked on your show yesterday, it's my endurance training. I listen to some right-wing radio. They had Sean Hannity talking about, I think he even admitted about getting a vaccination himself. He spent about 5-10 minutes talking about, oh, I trust the science. Y'all got to look at the science. I just don't want the government telling people to get shot. And it was funny because he was throwing out all these medical facts. And right before, he was talking about eating 5 eggs in a single sitting when he was talking about some reference about Cuba and wanting to bomb Cuba.
Good grief.
Yeah. I'm not kidding you.
Well, you know, thank you for checking in on conservative media, because that is certainly not something that I have the energy to do. I appreciate that report from the other side, Gus. Mark, do you ever do that? A lot of our listeners will call in and they'll say, like Paul from Seattle, you know, he'll just tune in. He used to listen sometimes to Rush Limbaugh or Fox News because he wants to hear what the other side is saying. I personally, I can't do it. I just don't have it in me.
Well, I do. I actually, it's my regular practice is I get up, you know, and I get my coffee and I sit down, and the first like 10, 15 minutes of my day, my work day at least, I watch Fox News. I have that on. I just want to see what their talking point is, what the main thing they're spinning. Because, I mean, it's very much, you know, it's very much, they're very on message. Seem to be very coordinated with, you know, other right-wing media and right-wing politicians. They always seem to be talking about the same thing. It's either, you know, the caravan, or it's, you know, how canceling Dr. Seuss, or, you know.
And, you know, here's the interesting thing, Mark, that I want to ask you about. You've worked in newsrooms, and so have I. And I've seen that same kind of apparent coordination of message. I've never seen a leaked email, so I'm guessing that they must have meetings where they face one another in person and, you know, the executive producer or the producer is saying, you know, well, like, here's what, here are today's talking points. That has to happen. There's just too much uniformity for there not to be guidance from the highest levels. At least that's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, having been in, you know, in newsrooms for 40 years, I was always sensitive to people thinking we're, you know, we had some sort of conference call and we were, you know, going to conspire to, you know, spin the news a certain way, because we were just, we didn't. And we were, you know, kind of too busy doing our own thing. But there does seem to be this kind of groupthink going on. And it may be that, you know, that people watch it on Fox and then write about it. Unfortunately, I think my former colleague, John Cass, that's kind of what he does, is I think he's watching a lot of Fox News these days, and he's saying the things that Fox News says. And so I think that Fox News may be one of the starting points for everyone else kind of chirping up. And think about it. Hannity's working both sides of the street. Hannity is, not only is he their, you know, big primetime guy, but he has Trump's ear, and he's talking to Trump almost every night, according to what has been reported with from good sources. So, you know, so there is this kind of Republican Party and Fox News saying the same thing. So there is that. I don't know that it's like some, you know, giant hero your marching orders today, but they all do seem to jump on the same thing.
And I would not have brought this up, but I also want to point out that your former colleague, John Cass, seems to be the only one of the people that I've read about who's sort of spit on the Tribune as they've walked out the door, which I think says a lot about him, much more so than it says about the publication that he's leaving. I've never been a fan of his. Not just because I disagree with what he writes, but the tone of what he writes. He doesn't strike me as being a particularly nice human being. And I felt like I got corroboration of that as he left the Tribune and was kind of like, you know, kind of like did the heck with you as I'm walking out the door. Anyway, yeah, that's my little mini rant.
I was an editor for years, so I know him quite well. And I do, I'm disappointed in him. I think that more as time has gone on, he is more decided that to serve his constituency, he's just got to throw up the red meat that they want. And he's also kind of focusing on national politics. He doesn't know nearly as much about as he knows local stuff. So he's kind of, that's why I think he's kind of repeating, you know, talking points. And it's just kind of sad. And as far as that, you know, saying, I think you're referring to him saying that the Tribune left him, he didn't leave the Tribune. Well, that's not true. I mean, he was offered a buyout. He accepted it and he took it, and it's a lot of money. So I don't know why we need to feel sorry for John Cass.
Yeah, and especially since he's been, I don't know what he's doing, some sort of podcast or something, and he's like, that he's back and he's better than ever. Well, that's debatable. Anyway, we're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. Mark Jacob and I will be back, where we have other things to talk about, and we will get to them right after this.
Do you want to get in on the conversation? You can now call or text us at 773-763-9278. WCPT's text line is sponsored by GWC Entry Lawyers. Visit them at justicestartstoday.com.
Joan Esposito, live.
Celebrating our power to bring about change.
Local.
Everybody has to work together.
And progressive.
I think you get the idea.
On WCPT 820.
I am joined by Mark Jacob. He is a former editor at the Trib and the Sun-Times. He is now associated with the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. And Mark, as we take a break from the calls for a minute or two, there's something that I don't know if you saw this or not. It was on C-SPAN, which is now one of my favorite viewing options. God help me. And it was a recent coverage of a congressional Senate hearing, and there was an interchange between Kentucky Republican Rand Paul and Dr. Anthony Fauci. Rand Paul, that name might be familiar to you. Remember, he's the guy who got beat up by his neighbor. And after some people started posting There's like a 6+ minute long clip of this exchange between Rand Paul and Dr. Anthony Fauci. And after it first started getting circulated on social media, people kept saying, you know, I say we support Rand Paul's neighbor. I'm, you know, now I understand what Rand Paul's neighbor was doing. And because this is the premise that Rand Paul brought to this interchange. He was trying to get it out there, not only that COVID was developed in a Chinese, a Wuhan, China lab, but that that lab was partially financed, had gotten money from the National Institutes of Health, and that Dr. Fauci himself knew about all this, supported this, signed off on this, and has been trying to lie to the American people about his involvement, his direct involvement in getting U.S. government money to this lab in Wuhan that specifically was experimenting on this virus. I know it seems crazy, because mostly it is, but he really went after Dr. Fauci in a way that has gotten a lot of attention. I'm certainly not going to play all 6 minutes of this, but here, listen to this. Here's a little over a minute of this interchange.
We don't know.
Well,
we don't
wait
know
a minute.
If it did
I
come
can,
from the lab, but all the evidence is pointing that it came from the lab.
You,
and there will be responsibility for those who funded the lab, including yourself.
I totally
this committee
resent,
will allow the witness to respond.
I totally resent the lie that you are now propagating, Senator, because if you look at the viruses that were used in the experiments that were given in the annual reports that were published in the literature, it is molecularly impossible.
No one's saying those viruses caused it.
It is molecularly.
Those viruses caused the pandemic. What we're alleging is that gain of function research was going on in that lab and NIH funded it.
That is
not.
Can't
get away from it. It meets your definition and you are obfuscating the truth.
I'm not obfuscating the truth. You are the one.
Time has expired, but I will allow the witness to.
Let me just finish. I want everyone to understand that if you look at those viruses, and that's judged by qualified virologists and evolutionary biologists, those viruses are molecularly impossible to result in SARS-CoV-2.
No one's saying those viruses caused the pandemic. We're saying they are gain-of-function viruses because they were animal viruses that became more transmissible in human, and you funded it.
And you
admit the truth.
And you implying...
Senator Paul, your time has expired, and I will allow witnesses who come before this committee to respond.
And you are implying that what we did was responsible for the deaths of individual. I totally resent
that.
And if anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
Mark, I didn't even know what to make of that. Rand Paul basically saying that this virus was developed in a Wuhan lab that got money from the NIH and that Fauci signed off on it, knew about it, and has been lying to Congress about it.
Right, right. It's Rand Paul. It's what he is. But several things about this. Number one, Paul said in that clip that all the evidence point to it coming from a lab. That's not true at all.
No.
Most people are saying, many people are saying, we don't know where it came from. Either it came, you know, from the wet market or it came from the lab. We don't know. And that is an open question. So to say that all the evidence points to that is ridiculous. But just to explain what gain of function research is, because I had to look it up because nobody knows what it is. It's frankly, it's one of those terms that the right wing uses like critical race theory when they want to act like they know what they're talking about when they're just pushing propaganda. But it actually means something. Gain of function research is when a scientist makes a pathogen more virulent or transmissible to better study its behavior. So in effect, if you did gain of function research in a lab, you would be in effect making a virus more, you know, stronger, better.
You'd be weaponizing it.
Right. Well, not necessarily because you want to make it a weapon. You'd be doing that so that you could study its behavior. You could see it behave more. But that's what Fauci's saying is that there's no indication that they did that or that the U.S. funded any kind of research in China for that. And Rand Paul doesn't know if that happened at all either. He's just making it up. He's gone after Fauci a lot. And the really creepy thing is how, you know, Fauci, who doesn't need this job, you know, when you think about it, has been just busted his ass for, you know, more than a year now, in a very important job and just relentlessly trying to get people to do the right thing. And you have people like Ron DeSantis in Florida who are like making, you know, beer cozies that, you know, with the don't Fauci my Florida kind of stuff. And you have Rand Paul just nipped there. They need an enemy. They need someone to blame, because the real person to blame for what the pandemic has done to the United States is Donald Trump and Mike Pence, because they're the ones who screwed up the whole thing when the response could have been a lot better. And so what do they do about that? Instead of, like, they don't want anyone to think about that, so they got to immediately go to, well, what was the cause of it? And I'd like to know the cause, too, but that's irrelevant to the fact that we screwed up the response, that the United States botched its response to the pandemic, causing hundreds of thousands of people to die unnecessarily. And so they don't want anyone to talk about that. So they're focused on Fauci as some big enemy for no reason, and they're in the origin story. But so it's sad. It's politics. And the fact that, you know, obviously I've been an enemy of this administration forever, but when the pandemic hit, I never could have imagined that they would politicize everything so much. I thought, you know, that's one of those things, like, you know, that's like 9/11. It's like it's something as awful as happened to your country, and everyone needs to, like, pull together and throw out the politics and just get the job done to protect as many people as possible. But no, they immediately politicized the whole damn thing at the cost of many, many lives. It's disgusting.
Who do you think Rand Paul was playing to? What was his audience?
Well, he's running for re-election next year. So I think he was playing.
Could the people of Kentucky be that stupid? I'm sorry to be so rude and blunt, but.
Yes. They elected Mitch McConnell overwhelmingly last year, even after all the crap he's pulled. Yes, they're that stupid. It's sad, but they are. Frankly, with McGrath was not as good a candidate as you would have liked to running against McConnell, but I don't think it would have mattered. You know what, Joan? The Republican Party has figured out that fear sells. And so, you know, they're scared of critical race theory. They're scared of, you know, cancel culture. They just make up stuff to be afraid of. They're scared of some caravan that's constantly marching toward, you know, our shores. So, unfortunately, propaganda works, and people can be scared into doing the wrong thing. And, you know, Kentucky's got a really good governor. I mean, he had a terrible governor, and he got beat, and they elected a really good governor. So it's just go figure.
Go figure. Let's take a break. We'll go back to the phone lines. I'm talking with Mark Jacob. We'll be back right after this.
Don't want to call but have something to say?
Am I in the air?
You can now text us at 773-763-9278. WCPT's text line is sponsored by GWC Injury Lawyers. Visit them at justicestartstoday.com.
WCPT 820, Chicago's progressive talk, where facts matter.
Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT 820.
I'm speaking with Mark Jacob, former Sun-Times and Trib editor. Now he works with Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. We have been most recently talking about how Kentucky's Senator Rand Paul threw a whole bunch of lies and misinformation at Dr. Anthony Fauci and then accused Dr. Fauci of lying in his testimony. It was a terrible exchange. We were also talking about Fox News and how lately, at least some of the hosts once in a while are talking about, yeah, you know, maybe you should get a vaccine. So let's go to the phone lines. Roosevelt is calling in. Hey, Roosevelt, how are you?
Hi, Joan. Hi, Mark. How are you guys doing today?
Hi.
Good.
Mark, I want to go back and ask you a question. Well, actually, I'm making a statement first. Unfortunately, Mark, we have to deal with what's in front of us in reality. We have a divided country, okay, where almost half of it has an alternative reality. Okay, the reality is you have members of Congress that they cannot even agree why there should be an investigation on what happened on Capitol Hill, okay? We have, you guys mentioned a little while ago, we have a governor in Florida that is making up T-shirts and selling them saying, mm-hmm. don't Fauci my Florida. So, Mark, it's great to think, well, we should be in this thing together, but it's not going to happen, Mark. It's just this is just my opinion. Based on everything that's happened the past 4 years, Mark, I mean, you know, to this day, you just had the leader of the House in the Republican Party finally admitting that Biden won the election. I mean, look how far we've gone. When it comes down to the other side, and I disagree, there is no Republican Party. We're dealing with fascism. That's what we're heading on the other side. I'm not even going to call them Republicans. On the other side. And do you remember what happened in Helsinki when our president said in front of all the whole world that he did not believe 17 of our government investigations that said that Russia interfered in our elections?
No, he believed Putin instead.
Yeah. Well, hang on, Roosevelt. Let's get Mark to give him a chance to respond to some of what you're saying.
Well, I don't disagree with anything he said. I don't. But where do we go from here? No, it's entirely true that the Republican Party has gone to the dark side. It just has. It has embraced fascism. It has embraced lies. It has embraced what I call pretendism, where you just pretend that real things are not real. You know, you pretend that Trump won the election. You know, you pretend that racism didn't happen in American history. It's just constant. It is magical thinking. And the scary thing is that, yeah, you can get some people to believe crazy stuff if you say it enough times. But Roosevelt, I don't know. I mean, you know, what's the future of this country? What do you do? I think that people who actually believe and respect truth and respect history, you know, that's based on facts, have just got to keep slamming away and telling it like it is. And, you know, and trying to wear down these people who are, you know, accepting the lies. I mean, I do think the Republican Party is an enemy of democracy. I think it's established itself as that. It fomented an attack on the Capitol, and then it is actively trying to cover up any investigation of it. Yeah, they're an enemy of the people, and they're going to try it again. So I think the Republican Party as a institution, yeah, total enemy. I don't see how you make peace with them. But the people who are supporting them and following them, I think you got to find a way to kind of slowly pull them back to reality.
Thank you for that, Mark. Let's go back to the phone lines. Dave is calling in from Hoffman Estates. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, Joan. Hey, Mark. On real quick on with Sean Hannity, didn't they at one time call him the unofficial Secretary of State for Trump?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say what I mainly was going to talk about, the article on in the military where the Department of Defense guideline that commanders and immediate supervisors and stuff now can ask these troops, you know, for proof of vaccination, because the ones that are supposedly fully vaccinated can go maskless. But and these others, if they, you know, they have not been vaccinated yet, it can affect them on the, like, they can cancel them from getting leave time and whatnot. And they cannot ask outrightly on a civilian DOD contractor unless he's received, you know, proof or something that this guy outrightly said that he's not taking the vaccine and that, you know, with first-hand knowledge of a voluntary employee statement. So maybe some of our bosses got to start doing that, you know, and hit them in the pocketbooks or something, like you know, he suspend driver's license or some kind of thing. You know, you got to hit him where it hurts, you know, to make him do it.
Mark, what do you think?
You have to make it a cost. You do have to. Well, the thing, you mentioned the military, Dave, and the thing that's, that blows me away on the military is we all know how the military works. It's you know, you enlist or you get drafted, but in this case, you enlist, and you're pretty much told what to do for the whole time you're in there. And it's not like everything's a debate or you're allowed to have a big appeal process. You're supposed to do it, and they've ordered soldiers to take vaccines forever, ever since there was a military and there were vaccines. Soldiers.
Well, my understanding was, and you guys can correct me if this policy has changed, but as long as the vaccines were only given emergency authorization, I don't believe that they were mandated. I think that's why we've seen a number of service people be able to refuse them. Once the vaccine gets full FDA approval and it's a legitimate vaccine, then I believe the military can order their troops to get it. That was the distinction a while ago.
I did not know that.
I had served, I took the oath three times. And, of course, it was a lot long before nowadays, and you couldn't refuse. You would have gotten Article 15, which was not official.
I think the difference is the emergency authorization gives the military people who don't want to get vaccinated an out. But that, you know, at least Pfizer, I believe, has already applied for, you know, sort of regular certification. Right. So once that happens, it'll be different.
Yeah, but I
think it's weird. It's hypocritical.
The Marines didn't want it, you know, that they refused.
I just think it's hypocritical that the Republicans, you know, who supposedly want a strong military are now like trying to actively encourage members of the military to go against what the commander in chief wants. And, you know, I just think that I honestly, everything in America has been politicized, and, you know, there's such things as honest differences of opinion, but I just think that even something as serious as a pandemic has been politicized by the right wing. I think they're just trying to throw a stick into the spokes of this country. They're trying to make things not work well so they can take over.
Yeah, Dave, we're out of time. I gotta wrap this up. Thank you so much, Dave, for your call. Mark, thank you so much for sharing your afternoon with us. It is always fun to talk with you about what's going on in the world today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. You had great callers today, too. I really enjoyed.
Yeah. You. I don't know whether it was you that brought out the callers. Maybe it's like, hey, that Mark Jacob guy is on. Let's get to the phones.
Always better with the callers. And I thought they were really good today.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so very much. We are going to take a break now. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Larry Robbins with the Robbins Headache Clinic. He just got back from Honduras, and we're going to ask him about that right after this.
Need a new social media account to follow for progressive politics? WCPT 820 is your best source for both progressive politics and programming. Give us a like on Facebook and a follow on both Twitter and Instagram. Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive. Every weekday afternoon from 2 to 5 p.m. on WCPT 820.
Of Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive, is sponsored by Robbins Headache Clinic. Dr. Larry Robbins is a regular guest here. And Damien, can we kill the music? Thank you. I was getting a little bit much. I sort of felt like I had to get up and dance. Dr. Robbins is just back from Honduras.
You're supposed to sing along.
And I wanted to ask him about his trip. Dr. Robbins, I know that you have talked on the radio before about how you do these trips to Honduras to provide, you know, psychological and neurological services to people. Tell us about this most recent trip.
Well, it's fun. We have I set up a neurology and psychiatry clinic in rural Honduras. We have four doctors, five including me, and a nurse, and it's good. Basically, my big role outside, I see some patients there, is as a drug mule. I bring in like 35,000 pills at a time, because everything's free and we try to supply all the drugs. But customs has gotten very difficult in Honduras. So they usually seize our medicines. But after 3 hours of haggling with them a few days ago, we got them through it. It's interesting. In Honduras, everybody takes COVID ultra seriously. So
really?
Many people wear two, yeah, they wear two masks and a shield, and they clean. They all carry spray bottles, and you touch anything, they clean your hands. They clean, and they'd love to get their hand on more vaccinations. They've had a few million vaccinations, but there's very little vaccine reluctance like we have here.
Well, is there a vaccine availability? Because I know a lot of countries have been saying that it's been difficult for them to get a supply.
We gave them over a million, I believe, vaccines, and El Salvador gave them quite a bit. El Salvador has a really good president, which is unusual for that area. I think he's very wealthy, and he's been very good, so that other countries want him. Actually, we're trying to recruit him as a president, and he's not corrupt. So although it's difficult when if a drug cartel tells you that you have to play with them or your family will get killed, it's hard not to play along.
Yeah.
So, but I wish we took the vaccine as seriously here as we did there, but we have a political cult going on, and I've been really interested in cults and the psychology behind it, trying to figure out what the heck is going on in our country. And it's interesting, but obviously scary. We could have been at herd immunity by now, almost.
Do you really think, though, the way the country is here in the United States, that we were ever going to get to herd immunity? That, you know, that this wasn't clearly from the beginning, Trump politicized this. And for there to be herd immunity, it has to be the same attitude as when we were fighting polio. I know you had mentioned that. I mean, nobody said, oh, it's my right to refuse a vaccine. So what if my kid ends up in an iron lung for the rest of their life? You know, I don't want anybody to infringe on my freedom. I mean, I think herd immunity is certainly a wonderful thing to talk about, but I think it's a goal that's aspirational, not realistic.
Right. Absolutely. If we didn't have a cult of personality, there's different cults. There's religious cults, there's sexual cults. There's one of those, Nvidium. There's a documentary now out on that, and plenty of religious cults. And then there's the Jonestown-type cults and political cults. And they're all sort of similar. Political cults have been around forever. We have Hitler and Stalin and Mussolini, and they're all very similar in ours. Now that religion is going down a little bit around the world and in our country, the gap is being held a little bit by politics. Let's follow Trumpism instead of going and sitting in the pew at services. And they all tend to follow the same pattern and the same type of leader, and they all crash and burn at the end. I can't think of any dictatorship that has ended well. And certainly,
so when you were in Honduras, when you were in Central America, didn't see the politicization of the illness or the vaccine? People seem to be open to it, would you say?
It's a world of difference from here. There's a little bit of vaccine reluctance naturally, but nothing like we have here. People would do anything to get a vaccine. They would give up 2 months' income. And it's incredible. If my mask went down below my nose, three people would jump and start growling at me.
Wow.
And they take
it so seriously. I see people wearing their masks like that, and I think to myself, you know, is it worth, you know, the potential angry conversation that I might have to have if I say, hey, by the way, you want to pull that mask up, you know?
It's insane. I was in South Dakota recently, and nobody had a mask. In fact, they had signs in shop windows, we discourage mask use.
Oh, what idiots.
They actually had a Trump store. I didn't go in there. But it's absolutely, it's pretty insane, you know, when we're talking about a deadly disease. And it's not just that COVID kills you or doesn't kill you. I wrote an article recently on long haul COVID and all the problems that a lot of people have. And to be fair to vaccine, a lot of people, some people do have problems after the vaccine, but not nearly as much as after COVID, which is much worse. And we all relaxed a little bit, and now, and the good news is the vaccines work, but now with the Delta variant being 85% of our COVID here now, I think we all have to go back, and particularly if people have risk factors, or and particularly diabetes, whenever they're out, they really should wear masks. It's crucial.
So I do want to talk. Let's take a real quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the actual good medical work you did when you were down in Honduras and that area. I'm talking to Dr. Lawrence Robbins with the Robbins Headache Clinic. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more right after this.
Of Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive, are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and SoundCloud. Just search WCPT 820.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Podcasts of Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive, are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and SoundCloud. Just search WCPT 820.
Now back to Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive on WCPT 820.
This segment of Joan Esposito, live, local, and progressive is sponsored by the Robbins Headache Clinic. Dr. Lawrence Robbins just came back from Honduras as a self-described drug mule, bringing some of the medicines that are difficult for the people there to obtain. Tell me about the work that you do when you're there and where you do it.
It's near the big city. We fly into Tegucigalpa, the big city, and then my friend Kato picks me up, and he does everything. And we go out into the rural area where we have a nice medical clinic, and within that we've built out a neurology and psychiatry clinic. But this medical clinic's incredible. They run a 24/7 ER without an X-ray machine, so we're going to buy one of those. And they deliver 450 babies a year without a little incubator afterwards, which affects, you need that for at least 10 of the kids a year. You can save their life or their brains. So we're going to get one of those incubators. But it's a really nice clinic. The docs are really good. And we see neurology and psychiatry. So I have four doctors rotating. They're young, idealistic neurologists and psychiatrists because they don't have to come out to our clinic. We do pay them, but they could make the same money at home in the big city. They just really want to care for the 95% of the population that has no access. And we've got a reputation now, so people are coming from 8 hours away or even other countries. But I see some really interesting. I saw, for instance, a 12-year-old girl with what we call inappropriate laughing and crying. She would just burst out crying, and she also has laughing. There's a technical name, pseudobulbar palsy, for that. And it's usually, in her case, it was from lack of oxygen at birth. And I think since I
mentioned, there was a part of her brain that probably was damaged when she was born or before she was born?
Yeah. I think they needed to get a C-section, and they can't. It's not easy. So we see the results of not being able to get C-sections there. We see a lot of epileptic seizures and severe developmental delay, or people who can't talk, can't ever go to school. And here we have easy access with a difficult delivery to C-sections. It just makes it a lot easier. We do see a lot of psychopathology, a lot of psychiatric. I saw we had an 8-year-old girl who was violent who wanted to light her brother on fire. And
oh dear.
Then
is that again? Do you think something like that, is that some sort of brain damage that she probably has? Is what is the impetus for that kind of behavior? Nature, nurture, a combination?
That was a combination. There's mental illness in the family, and she had a difficult birth with not enough oxygen. And that combination is not good. There's mental illness all over, but they're less equipped to deal with it there. They don't have the drugs. You know, as much as we rail against psychiatric drugs, they do help a lot of people, and they don't have as easy access. More importantly, they don't have access to psychiatrists as much. Although we have not that many, you know, we have a fair amount of psychiatrists, neurologists, specialists in Central America. In some of the African countries, there's almost none. There's like one for 3 million people.
Wow. So
it's better where we are. But we saw a man flinging his arm out. It's a form of chorea. Some people know of Huntington's chorea. It's sort of a form, but his arm would violently fling out. And it was probably, there's a lot of farmers there and from pesticide use. On the other hand, people take care of, they're more connected as a society than we are, less isolated. They can't all afford to live in a little box in the sky like we do. So they take care of each other. It's more like we were in like 1900 or so. And there's good and bad to that.
But you said that a lot of people come to your clinic because they have no access. Are you talking about they have no access because of geography or because they can't afford the medical clinics or hospitals or doctors that are there? What is the problem?
Yeah, they can't afford it. If you can't pay, you can go to the public hospital, but it's difficult.
And what's next?
Yeah, you can't call there and make an appointment. You have to actually go and make an appointment. And they can't travel to the big city where the public hospital is. So most people just don't see doctors. And if they can't afford the medicine, they don't get it. On the other hand, medicine is easy there. And even though we don't have that much technology, you don't need that much technology. We do our MRIs and everything here, but we can often get by just treating people with what we feel 95% of the time, it's really fine. And we have no sense of entitlement. Probably in years that I've been going there, we've had basically zero complaints. People will wait all day. They're just so happy to be able to see a psychiatrist or a neurologist. And there's no paperwork. So the benefit of no insurance is, from our standpoint, it's just us and a chart and the patient. And it's
who underwrites your trip? Who pays for you to go down there and to bring all the medicine? How does that happen?
I have a not-for-profit, and I have some nice videos, really professionally done videos, and some blogs on my website. So people just Google me, Lawrence Robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S. The website right on the first page is the Honduras section. And it's really interesting. We have four or five nice videos on there and blogs. But we raise the money. I just wrote an article for doctors, how to set up a clinic like this, and do's and don'ts. And I said you could either be born rich or you can start a nonprofit and raise money. I said being born rich is preferable and easier, but not all that practical. So
do you have to get the permission from the government? I mean, are there other medical centers there that worry that you're siphoning off potential business?
No, we do dance around it. I don't call us an official, separate neurology and psychiatry clinic because then I would have to do paperwork and probably other things. So we're within a big medical clinic. And that's why I tell doctors, I've worked with some doctors setting up clinics like in Africa, to find a really good medical clinic that's running, that's well run. You can't just do it on your own. But the biggest problem is as we've grown and we have thousands of patients supplying enough medicine, a lot of the medicines are not available in Honduras or not great quality, or surprisingly, they're much more expensive than here.
Really? So, I was going to ask you about the cost.
Yeah, some medicines are cheap there. Most of them are, I can get at a better price here. For instance, one of our main migraine medicines, sumatriptan, here I can get it, and it works better than the ones they have there. Sumatriptan is just a wonderful migraine medicine. We bring in thousands of pills, and I can get it for 50 cents a pill here. In Honduras, it might be $4 or $5.
Wow.
Which makes it unaffordable except to the 5%. So it's more, and then we've sent medicine by DHL or FedEx, and that gets held up. Customs has gotten very difficult, partly for good reason. They're afraid people are going to sell things on the black market, and they're afraid I'm going to turn around and sell them. So now I'm 67 years old. I showed them my balding head. I said, do I look like somebody who's going to sell these on the black market, really? And the last time I was there, the soldiers came over because I started taking pictures. And I asked them if, I said I'd put my camera away. I don't, you know, unless they have mints on the pillows in the Honduran jails, I really don't want to go to jail there.
Yeah, really?
But they
absolutely.
Yeah, it's not as if they were going to throw it. I mean, they should know me by now. But it's actually, the people are wonderful. And they make do with very little. It almost makes me embarrassed for our country with our wealth is and our riches, how much we waste.
How often do you go there?
I go about every 3 months, and we can Skype with some patients. Mostly it's coordinating all the doctors and the nurses and bringing in enough supplies. We do brainwave tests quite a bit out in the clinic, electroencephalograms. We have an epilepsy specialist from Maine City who comes out. And I don't
what if
know
you, rural... What if you find somebody who has like a brain tumor? Obviously, you're not going to be in a position to deal with that. But what if they are poor and can't afford a regular hospital? Do you sometimes diagnose conditions that are difficult to treat?
Yes, so we can get them to the public hospital, and I know an outstanding young neurosurgeon there who was trained in the United States. In fact, he started the first epilepsy surgery program in Honduras, maybe the first in the surrounding countries there, and he's terrific. So he'll take care of the patients. They can get care. It's just not always right away. So I was recently in our clinic there, and we heard some screams, and I ran in, and a stepfather had shot everybody in the house and shot the stepson and in the hand. And here we would have a hand surgeon right away. And there we had to, it's difficult to get somebody to use the ambulance. You need permission of the local mayor to use the ambulance to get to the big city.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm so glad you do this, and I'm so glad that it is appreciated by the people you treat. And congratulations on this. And, you know, I mean, people who are making the world a better place are always people I love to talk to, and I really admire the different ways that people find to use their expertise to make a difference. So, Dr. Robbins, thank you. Next time when we meet, I do want to get you back on to your analysis of the psychology of the Trump cult, but we'll do that next time, okay?
That'll be fun. Thank you.
Great. That's going to be it for me today. Santita will be here tomorrow at 6 a.m. The Rick Unger Show is next. Stay safe. Have a great evening. Good night.
Stephanie Miller.
Today a cashier was killed because she asked someone to wear a mask.
Oh, my.
This is the confluence of our country's worst instincts, misinformation, firearms, and unbridled anger. I mean, I'm getting on a plane in 2 weeks, Jody. I don't know whether to be more afraid of the Delta variant or somebody beating the out of me on the plane. Like, what is going on planes? People losing their chisel.
Stephanie Miller, weekday mornings, 8 to 11. Sponsored by the Porsche Exchange in Highland Park. Visit 4Porsche.com, the number 4Porsche.com.